The question has always been, what if you sold your soul to the devil? But what if your soul was already sold, or you even knew it? That's coming up next, right here on The Right Stuff. Showcasing Christian authors from all over the world. England, Canada, India, Thailand, UK, USA. It's Tuesday night, and this is The Right Stuff with your host, the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J. Coles. Hi, and welcome to another edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me. I am so excited to showcase our book today. It's called The Man Wrapped in Darkness. It is a book that takes a very unique spin on spiritual warfare. So what you definitely want to do is go ahead and pick up your copy of The Man Wrapped in Darkness today. It's going to challenge you, it's going to inspire you, and it's going to also invigorate your imagination. And what book doesn't do that on this show? We have such a great roster of Christian authors from all over the world, writing from all sorts of genres, and this is no different. The Man Wrapped in Darkness, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Can't wait to talk to my guest, co-host, and contributor today, Matthew Newson. We'll be talking to him in just a few moments. I want to thank all of you so much for your continuing support of my newest release, A Bride for Esau. It is my last contribution to the Proxy Bride series. It's been fun writing in that series for the past 2 years with wonderful authors. Excited to get on to new projects and new stories to tell. Definitely want to thank Christine Sterling for inviting me to that multiple author project. It has been a blast. Thank you so much, Christine. I also want to give a shout out to Peter Young Husband from Perspective by Peter. He has been wonderful to work with for the past several years, and he always brings to me the most interesting guests, and today's guest is no different. Make sure you go ahead and pick up a copy of my brother's book today. As always, I want you to prayerfully consider if you can financially support this ministry. We do support Christian authors from all over the world and have been doing so for the last 7 years. We just started our Patreon account this year. So prayerfully consider if you can become one of our Patreons. You can become a Quill member for as little as $3 a month. Prayerfully consider that. But if you can't, you know what? That is quite all right, because we do covet your prayers. Your prayers will do something money won't do, and that's to make sure that this ministry continues to uplift the name of Jesus Christ until he comes back. As always, we want to invite you to call in by calling in at 646-668-8485. Then press that 1 to be live on air. Or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff, with your questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The Spec Faith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com. exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guest. Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very glad you are here with me today. We are talking to Matt Newsom. He is the author of the book, The Man Wrapped in Darkness, book one of the Man Wrapped in Darkness trilogy. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. This is what you call a dark, clean thriller. And I say that because some people say, what can something be dark and thrilling and clean? Yes, this ticks off all the boxes. It doesn't make that subject matter any less grave or gritty, but it is definitely a good book for those of you to check it out. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy of The Man Wrapped in Darkness today. Once again, I want to thank Peter Younghusband for the connection. You can follow Peter by going to his website, Perspective by Peter. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest co-host and contributor today, Matt Newsom. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the show. Very excited to have you and ready to just delve into this book. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
One thing I always have our guests introduce themselves in their own words. And I say why, because I can always read a bio. And incidentally, when I first started the podcast, I used to read everyone's bios all the time. But how does that tell us who you are? You may want to mention something that other people don't know. You know what I'm saying? So go ahead and tell us who you are in your own words.
Yeah. So hello everyone. I'm Matthew Newsom. Born up in actually Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and moved down to Texas when I was just a baby and been down here ever since. And, you know, I have a beautiful wife and two awesome little boys that keep me busy, and they're a huge blessing to me. And one of the driving forces of why I do a lot of the things that I do in my life, they're just awesome blessings to me. And, you know, I gave my life to the Lord when I was 21, about 14 years ago. And so I asked the Lord, when he came into my heart, I told him, you know, Lord, whatever it is you want me to do, I will do it. And so I've just been on this journey and with him and growing and learning. And, you know, it's been a pretty crazy journey, but now I'm here. So writing books for him, and I want to write, you know, these novels that will really just set people on fire for the Lord, get them excited about a walk with God. And that's about it.
One thing that you definitely did is get people excited about the book, particularly since the way you came at it is non-traditional, which I absolutely love. I do love fresh takes on very interesting ideas. And you talk a lot about spiritual warfare in The Man Wrapped in Darkness, but it's in a way that I think is easily accessible, easily visible, but yet no less the more gritty for the realism that you include in the book, The Man Wrapped in Darkness. So kudos to you for that. And for those of you listening, this is Matt's debut series. And you all know I love to showcase debut authors. He just wrote this book, I think, April. You published it in April, I think, of this year. So this is your first debut series and everything. So it's exciting to go ahead and just, you know, delve and peel back the veil of this book. Before I do that, I definitely wanted to tell you, want you to tell us what your journey to writing, what did that look like for you?
Yeah, so it actually all begins with this book and what inspired it. So 7 years ago, I got let go from a job like right about this time. And when I did, it was really I remember at the time I was really upset. I couldn't mm-hmm. find another job for about 5 months. And during that time, I just it was just my wife and I. We hadn't had kids yet. And it really challenged me. And it challenged that time. It challenged me in my walk with God. And I just chose to go deeper. And, you know, because I struggled for a little while there, I'm like, God, why do these things just seem to keep happening to me? Why do I keep getting all these roadblocks and setbacks? And at the time, I wasn't a reader. Writing was nowhere on my radar or my spectrum. And then when I really gave over all of the things I was struggling with at the time, I had this dream. And in the dream, I saw the character, the man wrapped in darkness. And that dream I had 7 years ago is just as vivid as it is today. And I saw this character, I saw this man, and terrified me. I mean, it was amazing. It was just all the amazing. It's one of those dreams that you have and it feels so real. And then when I woke up, I remember I was like, it was imprinted on me. I mean, the dream is still just as vivid at today as it was 7 years ago. And I sat down and I tried to think of like a story to put him in. And I had tried several times and I never seemed to be able to get it, never seemed to be able to take it off. And then my life, you know, life happens and I got busy, you know. I eventually found another job and in a whole another industry, had to learn a whole new set of skills. And then at the same time, my wife got pregnant. So all of that went on to the back burner. And then about 3 years ago, it was just a God thing. I'm sitting there and just God drops it in me. I see, it's almost like, kind of like, you know, you see something in your head and it's like so vivid. It's like you're watching a movie. And I see this scene and the man wrapped in darkness coming in and confronting somebody. And so I sit down at my computer and I type it out. And it's turned out to be the first two chapters, which we actually ended up cutting from the book. At the time I typed them up and I showed my wife and I said, "Hey babe, check this out. What do you think?" And she read it and she was like, "Wow, this is pretty cool. You should keep going." And I was like, "Really?" She goes, "Yeah, keep going." So I sat down and I had no background in writing. Like I went to school for marketing and for, you know, business degrees and never did anything like this. So I just had this idea and God just gave it to me, just flowed from one chapter to the next, to the next, to the next, until I finished it. And then I wrote a prequel book, which we've put on the back burner for right now. And then I also wrote The Man in White, which is the second book now in the series. And I was really excited. I was trying to figure out what to do. And where I work, there's a guy, his name's Mike Coas. He wrote a book on how to self-publish. He wrote a book called The 10 Steps for Self-Publishing. And I got hooked up with him and he gives me his book and he's telling me all about all the journey he went on and he's written several things. He said, "Whatever you do, make sure you find a copy editor." And I'm so glad I did, because my copy editor is an amazing gift from God. Her name's Carla Rossi, just totally helped me. And how I found her was I went to my pastor and I was like, "What do I do? You know, I have these books, I'm trying to find an editor." And he turned me on to a book called, it was like the 2019 Christian Authors Self-Publishing Guide. And I got the book and I turned to the editor section and I'm praying and asking God. I'm like, "God, show me an editor. Point me in the right direction. Please show me, what can I do? You know, who can help me?" And so I look down and there's a page and there's somebody, I find this one person there in Texas. And I asked the Lord, I'm like, "Lord," it's like my, you know, we all have those moments where we're like Gideon, we throw our fleece out there. And I said, "God, would you give me somebody local like that? I really would rather them be local." And I just turned the page and there's Carla's information. And I reached out to her and she messaged me back and we got to talking. And I sent her the book and she was like, "Have you ever written before?" And I was like, "Nope, first time." And she's like, "Yep, okay." Because I had made so many first time mistakes. And but it was so amazing because she helped me. She taught me how to write. She sent me different things, articles to read, the rules of writing. And I mean, just between her and the Lord helping me, just rewrote the first book, added to it, cleaned it up, rewrote the second book, and then got that cleaned up. And then I wrote the third book, The Symphony of Death, in about a month, because I just got the bug, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we got here today.
Oh, it's incredible. One of the things that I noticed that we both share in common is when we both lost our jobs and how things happened from that moment. Cool. When I first lost my job, and my listeners are probably so sick of the story, but it's new to you, Matt, so I tell you. So when I first lost my job, it was back at 2010, I think. And I had a book I had been writing since I was who knows when. And I finally looked at it, and I had an archaic device. And I joke about this all the time. It was called a 3.5 floppy disk. And I had used it to have my story on there. And I remember saying, I'm so sick of seeing you on this computer. I want you out there. And push came to shove. I ended up going through a vanity press and got my first book published. And as they say, the rest is history, because I started my writing. I started doing lots of good things. And it's amazing what happens when you allow the Lord to work in your life. And when you step out on faith, it is quite amazing what happens. Mm-hmm. And what's very particular, interesting in my opinion, about your story is that you were obedient to the calling. And one thing I always mention on this show is that if God has given you the gift to write, then write stuff. And what's also equally fascinating is that, you know, you didn't know how to write, you know, in your own words, you didn't know how to write, or you made mistakes as you wrote. And then someone came along and helped you hone those skills. And that's amazing. Because like I said, it reads well. The book reads well. And that's probably from numerous rewrites and, you know, going over and say, okay, what did I put here and what did I put there, you know. And so we want to definitely thank Carla Rossi. And I know who she is, actually. We want to thank Carla Rossi for her help with you getting this out, because the book reads really good, very fast paced.
Thank you.
Very quick, and is not bogged down in any way. It's a very fast read. For those of you listening out there, we are talking about the genesis of The Man Wrapped in Darkness. Go ahead and pick up your copy today on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Now, Matt, the other thing I wanted to ask you, you kind of already told us, but I love asking this question. It's one of my favorite questions, because writers do things differently. So from what I can tell, you are a pantser, not a plotter. Would you agree with that? Disagree? What do you do?
What did you say?
Are you a pantser? Are you a pantser or a plotter?
Answer. You'll have to forgive me. I've never heard that one.
Oh, yes. Oh, kind of writes on the flow. They don't have like a structure, organized outline. A plotter is someone who tends to outline their book and plot it out before they write. So which one do you fall in?
I'll tell you, it's kind of a combination of both, but I'm definitely a plotter. But I kind of flow between the two, because what I'll do is, and I did this with the three books, and then with the other book I have coming out this in the fall. It's called The Prophet's Anointing. But what I typically do is I start off with like an idea for a character, and then I'll write down that, like, I'll give them a name, attributes, things about them, like what is this person wanting, what are they trying to solve, what are they after, what motivates them. And then from there I'll start building other main characters, supporting characters, and I get an idea of what I want to have, how I want the book to start. So then I'll, you know, have just a brief synopsis of, you know, chapter one, do this, chapter two, this, three, to where it gives me a structure, but also I leave it loose enough to where if I see that I'm writing myself into a corner, because we can all see that, you know, as you're writing, you can kind of feel like, oh, if I keep going, I'm going to box myself in here and it's not going to be good. It's loose enough to where I can go back, I can change things, or I can, you know, edit things as I go, you know, as I'm going through, and I'm like, you know what, this would be better here, or I'd rather have this happened in this chapter and instead of what I initially thought was going to happen in the chapter. And then I can just edit and change, you know, how the other chapters will flow from there in my outline form. So I feel like it gives me enough structure to work with, but also enough freedom to where I can, you know, move things all around, add chapters, take things away. So that did
fascinating.
Fascinating.
No, it does. Yeah. It's like you're a plotter. What I will say, a plotter. So you plot some, and then pants a little bit too. I'm a diehard pantser, as most people know. Plotting frightens me. So I definitely like hearing that. And so for those of you listening in, we are talking to Matt Newsom. He is the author of the book, The Man Wrapped in Darkness, book one of the Man Wrapped in Darkness trilogy. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. You can call in at 646-668-8485. Press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stop, with your questions or comments. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
The Speculative Fiction Cantina is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Hi, is your book club in need of some fresh and exciting questions to ask club members and authors at your next book club meeting? Literizations, the book conversation game, is 70 thought-provoking questions to really get into an in-depth discussion about the books you and your club members are reading. These questions really get into the characters, the storyline, and into the author's head. These questions may just give you and your book club members a whole new way to get into a new conversation, a literization. Literizations is also a great set of tools for bloggers, interviewers, and authors to use a discussion question. Are you ready to get lit? Please visit our website at litversations.com, LITVERSATION.com. And please like our Facebook page at Simply Said Reading Accessories. Thank you.
Christian authors and writers, welcome to Readio. Readio app, developed exclusively for showcasing Christian fiction and nonfiction ebooks and audiobooks. Tired of book sales plummeting due to algorithm-influenced unrelated classifications? Books lost amongst non-Christian content? Readio allows you to reach your target audience, who's eager to devour your Most High God-inspired books in a variety of Christian subgenres. You write in a niche market. Readio solely caters to it. Follow at Readio App today on social media, or visit readioapp.com to know when we are accepting author catalog uploads. Readio, the best app for the Most High-influenced ebooks and audiobooks.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guest. Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. So very, very glad you are here with me today. We are talking to my guest, co-host and contributor, Matt Newsom. He is the author of the book, The Man Wrapped in Darkness. It's book one of the Man Wrapped in Darkness trilogy, available to you on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. This is fantasy and speculative fiction at a wonderful rate. Let me tell you, when you read it, it goes so fast, and you're almost surprised that you're done with the book by the time you get to the end of it, because you're so immersed into the story. This, again, is Matt's debut series, and as you all know, I love showcasing debut authors, because I want you, aspiring author out there, if God has given you the gift to write, pick up the pen and do it. Guess what? This could be you on the show, showing everyone what God has given you to share with the world. You never know what your fictional works or your non-fictional works would do for that one person that needs to hear the word to say. So make sure you pick up the pen and write stuff. Matt, thank you so much for being with me again on the show. Really enjoy getting behind the scenes of who you are as an author. Now, we definitely want to delve into The Man Wrapped in Darkness. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about the book. I did a nice little teaser at the beginning of the broadcast, but tell us about the book, but make sure you don't give us any major spoilers.
Oh, I won't know. And thank you again for having me. So The Man Wrapped in Darkness is about a young man named Alec Williams, and he has to return home and take over this vast family company that his father left him. His father just had a massive heart attack and passed away. And as he goes home and starts to take it over, he's wrestling with issues. His father was very abusive verbally and neglectful growing up, and his mother passed away when he was a young child. So as he delves into this, he's wrestling with his demons from his past, and he goes home to New York. He takes over the company, and then he gets visited by the Man Wrapped in Darkness one evening. And the Man Wrapped in Darkness asks him a question, and I won't say what it is. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but tells him he's coming soon for his answer, and how he answers the question depends on if Alec will live or die. And so as Alec is trying to figure this question out, and he's trying to understand how to answer it, what does he need to do, what does it mean, he starts to discover that his family's company isn't as great as he thought it was. And as he's uncovering these things, Lucifer, in the form of a man, visits him in his office and tells him, you will keep running this company the way I tell you to, because there's elements of it that are funding his kingdom on the earth. And he says, if you change anything, I will kill you. And both heaven and hell claim that the Man Wrapped in Darkness works for them. So that sets Alec on this journey of trying to figure out how to save his company, how to save himself. You know, is the Man Wrapped in Darkness really good? Is he bad? Obviously, Satan is bad. And so he's essentially in a fight for his life throughout this book.
One thing about the company, this massive conglomerate that Alec has, you would think, because it does have so much money, because this conglomerate is huge. It has industries, it has businesses and companies in all sorts of industries. So it's a conglomerate. You think that with all that money, he'd be happy. But one thing you showed early on in the book is that money doesn't buy happiness. And Alec actually grew up with a very verbally abusive father. And you kind of sit there and you wonder, here I am with billions of dollars at my hand, and I'm still not happy. I think the mournfulness of his childhood is something you capture very quickly, because he's angry. He always wanted to be approved by his father, and his father will not give him that. Do you think that speaks to a lot of what a lot of fatherless men and young women experience, is this need to be approved by dad, and dad refuses for whatever reason to give that approval?
Well, I do feel though it does lend to that, yes. And also I think it speaks to a lot of people that even adults, we still find ourselves trying to vie for the affections of our parents. And some of us, you know, the parents have passed on, and I've known people that their parents have passed away, and they still live their lives as if they're trying to gain that approval and that affection. And one things I wanted to show through the book was redemption. And also that, you know, God has to heal you. You know, the Lord is the only one that can heal you. I mean, not everybody had a great childhood. And so I was very fortunate. I was blessed to, you know, I had two loving parents. But I know not everyone has that. And I know there's so many. One of the elements, like I said, I wanted to tackle in the book was letting that go, giving that to the Lord, you know, letting go of past hurts, resentments, whoever they're harbored against, you know, so that way, because for a person to be whole and to be happy, because like you said, he's a billionaire. He's got this huge company. He's got billions of dollars, very wealthy man, and he's young, and he's not happy. You know, he's just driven by all of these hurts and pains in his past that no matter what he does, it can't be reconciled because his father's passed away. And so that's one of the things I wanted to show in the book, you know.
Alex is a very interesting character for the simple fact that he should have the life that we all want, and he doesn't. In fact, I felt so bad for him. There's one scene in the book where his father basically just tells him, he says, I got an A-. or if he got an A+, his dad said, well, my A+ was better than your A+. And you're sitting there going, are you kidding me? You know, are you kidding me? What kind of sick so-and-so does that? Why would you make your A+ say, well, my A+ is better than your A+? It was just incredible. But I can honestly see how someone can live with these just unattainable expectations that this father had put on him. His dad just said, I want you to meet this impossibly high standard that even his father couldn't meet. And you just feel so bad for him, because wrapped up in this narrative, Alec is angry at his dad. He's angry too, because he's like, if God lives or if he exists, why do I have this light? And I think that is one of the themes, The Man Wrapped in Darkness, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And I think you deal with it quite beautifully, because you don't hide from the fact that Alec is hurt, that when we don't give our children what they need to survive and become members of a thriving society, you know, not to mention their spiritual foundation, they are racked with pain. Mm-hmm. What else would you add to that, Matt?
Exactly. I would add to it. One of the things I wanted to show is what it looks like, what a father looks like that's not led by the Lord. You know, like our Heavenly Father loves us, you know, and He's always there for us and helps us. And, you know, I've known people who have grown up with dads like this, and they're older men. I'm in my mid-30s. I've known men that are in their 50s, early 60s, and they've told me stories like this, and it just breaks my heart for them. And I always tell them, like, your Heavenly Father doesn't see you like that. You know, you don't have to jump through all these hoops and hurdles to get His love. And that was one of the things I wanted to show. And, you know, Alex, who his friend in the story, is always telling him that, you know.
Helps. And that's a good point you make. No, it's a good point you make, because the pain of a parent's rejection doesn't last until that person is dead. It lasts far after that. And a lot of the story happens after his father passes away. And one of the intriguing things about it, it really shows you just how important a father is in a child's life. This is not to say a mother isn't important, because we have an interesting scenario where the mother is the complete opposite of dad. And you kind of sit there like, okay, and I will be honest with you. I will be honest with you. I said, Mom, how did you marry this man? Okay. How did that happen? And, you know, I kept wondering, was she aware of how her husband treated her son? And she was just deflecting that, because I was a little upset with her. I felt as if she should have protected her son from that. But in a way she did, because while he got disapproval and hate from his father, he was wrapped in love from his mother. And do you think having that element that there is someone who still loves you in your life, do you think that was an important thing to bring out in this story?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Just from my own, you know, from my own personal testimony I shared with you a little earlier, that was one of the things, you know, as I grew up and got older, when, you know, and life happens, and I went through some difficult things, left me when I was an older teenager, and left me very angry and cynical and just alone. And I often was like, that was like the cry of my heart for years until I met Christ, was I just wanted someone to love me. Like, I just wanted that. I wanted to know that somebody truly, genuinely loved me, no matter what. And just, I knew that would always be there. And I don't mean that like in a selfish way. I think that we all have that desire to be loved, and to be, just to have that, to know it's like someone's going to love me for all my, like, not just all my, all the good stuff about me, but for all the imperfections within me. And, you know, I told you the night I gave my life to the Lord, I was on the verge of taking my life. And so as I was getting ready to do that, I heard the Lord say to me, don't do this. I still love you. And that's when I just was like, Lord, if you take all this away from me, all this hurt, all this pain, I'll serve you for the rest of my life. And And that's paradigm altering. That's life altering when a loving, positive force like that enters your life. I mean, it changed. I mean, for me, it turned me around. I mean, just things started shifting my life. And you know, I've been living for the Lord now for 14 years, and you know, trying to do my best every day to live for Him, to do better than I did yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to me, it's just, it's major when somebody loves you. And I think that's what people are. I mean, we look around the world and you see there's so many hurting people and so much stuff going on. And, you know, I'm not trying to sound cliche, but I mean, people, you know, people need love. They need to know they're loved and they need to feel they're loved. And that changes a lot of people, you know.
It reminds me of that song, Love Lifted Me. And it says, when nothing else could help, love lifted me. And there's something to that, because He lifts us out of our despair. He lifts us out of our guilt. He lifts us out of our shame, because we are sunk by these things. Sin will weigh you down. Sin will try to bury you. But thank God He reaches down with His powerful hand and lifts us out the clay of sin. That's why I call it the miry clay, and it gets caught and it gets stuck to your skin and your legs and your feet, and you're almost like caught in a tar pit, you know, and you're sinking in and you're sinking in, and all these things are trying to drag you down, and Lord comes and He lifts you out of that. So I definitely concur with that. And when you shared your testimony earlier with me before the broadcast, I was just so pleased that the Lord called you out, because now we are here 14 years later, having no idea that we would meet talking about a book that I hope will change someone's life. And that's why I always say, you know, if you have the gift to write, go ahead and use it, because you never know who's going to be blessed by it. Another character in your story that we have to talk about, we have to talk about Rachel Valinsky. Now, Rachel Valinsky is a character that's in Alex's life and has been in his life for many years. He's known her since he was a child. But she is, I don't want to call her quite a Jezebel, even though she kind of is. I don't want to call her a seductress, even though she kind of is. But she's just a really sad person, doesn't know how sad she is. Tell us a little bit about Rachel and how she impacts Alex's life.
So basically, this kind of summed her up. She's, you know, that, I don't know if you ever heard this old saying, all hurting people do is hurt other people. And she's, you know, it's briefly talked about in the book. She's faced a lot of hurt and rejection in her own life. And her father's into some very bad things. I don't want to say everything, right? Don't want to give anything away. But, you know, her father brings her into the fold, and that also influences her very, you know, her behavior. But, you know, I've known people like this, and, you know, that they just like to hurt people. You know, they enjoy a control over somebody, and they enjoy knowing that, like, if I say jump, this person will be already in the air asking me how high. And so that's what I based her off of, that, you know, like is this manipulative, controlling person who enjoys that, because she's so hurt and she's so messed up herself that if she can cause it on other people, it's a distraction. It'll take away from how she feels. She doesn't have to pay attention. She doesn't have to look at the junk in her own life, because she's, you know, all about control. She's all about, you know, power and influence, and wants that, you know, she just wants to have her way no matter what the cost. And so that's why she's like that Jezebel, seductress, you know, kind of character that you were talking about. Yeah.
And she does, you know, the thing about it is that Alec is susceptible to her, because, you know, she is seductive. And he finds himself susceptible to her. But I kind of wanted to slap him a few times, because I'm thinking to myself, you know, there is a pattern here, sweetie. I want to tell her there's a pattern here. She'll reel you in, and then she'll kick you in the face. Reel you in, kick you in the face. Reel you in, kick you in the face. It's like, how many times do you have to get kicked in the face before your lip gets balled up? You know what I mean? Like, how many times does it have to happen? But it's because he was going through his own spiritual struggle, too. And that was something that I thought was interesting. What were you going to add to that?
I was going to say, you know, Well, you know, sometimes it takes some of us, because I can relate to that. I was kind of like that when I was younger, you know, was head over heels for a girl, and she didn't return the same feelings, you know, then would kind of mess my emotions. So finally I was like, okay, enough, like, you know, enough. Well, after like the fourth, fifth time, I know it's sad to admit, but enough, it's done. And then a couple of years later, I met my beautiful wife, and, you know, the rest is history, as they say. So,
yeah. Well, that's true. Like you said, hurt people will hurt people. Yeah. Well, hurt people will hurt people. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for Rachel because and ultimately I feel as if she's just a pawn, even though she thinks she's the master puppeteer, if you will. Now, when we get back, we're going to talk some more about the spiritual warfare aspects of The Man Wrapped in Darkness. Again, The Man Wrapped Darkness is book one of the Man Wrapped in Darkness series. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. You can call in at 646-668-8485. We'll be right back.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Conflict is expensive.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
And this is Get Hope. Get Hope.
Emotionally, financially, relationally, it diverts valuable energy essential to accomplishing just normal activities that we're involved in every day. A study of on-the-job issues ranked marriage and career conflicts as events that rob people of personal peace and productivity. You know, Jesus came to resolve the ultimate conflict between humans and God, and he's still resolving conflict today. A conflicted relationship that comes before God in prayer suddenly gives way to avenues of forgiveness and reconciliation. Got a big conflict in your life? Well, tell Jesus about it in detail, and you'll be surprised at what happens.
In today's chaotic world, isn't it good to know there's hope? And if you'd like more hope, Lauren Libby has resources available,
including a free 30-day devotional he'd be happy to send to you.
Get yours today at GetHopeRadio.com.
Are you an indie author looking to create audiobooks listeners will love? At The Audio Flow, we handle the entire process, from casting the perfect voice to distribution. Contact us today at 317-927-8770. The Audio Flow, a new way to do audio.
We're back with the Queen of Tuesday Night and her guest. Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. We are talking to my guest co-host and contributor today, Matthew Newson. He is the author of the book, The Man Wrapped in Darkness. It's book one of the Man Wrapped in Darkness series, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. If you're already intrigued about the book, just letting you know that books two and three is out there. The second book is called The Man in White, and the third book is called Symphony of Death, available once again on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. And Matt, once again, thank you so much for being with me on today's show, having a wonderful time talking with you. And I got to delve now into some of the, I got to delve now into some of the spiritual warfare aspects of this book, because you took a very tactile take on the subject. And I say tactile because you put on familiar things that we can relate to, so we can understand what's going on, while still making true to the fact that the demonic beings are spiritual beings. But you did put tactile flesh on them. For instance, there's a scene where the man in darkness, there's a scene from his point of view very early in the story, is walking through an event, and he sees demonic beings. Some are imps, some are misshapen beasts, and others are still like straight and stand taller. And this, in my mind, shows the physical hierarchy on one level, but also shows the hierarchy among demons, just like we have hierarchies in our own society. There are certain hierarchies that we have. I actually like this bit of the story because, again, you make it relatable to, let's say, a non-believer who may be reading the story. They can actually put their eyes on something they are quote unquote familiar with from all the horror movies out there. You know, they're always got imps and, you know, and all that kind of stuff happening in movies and stuff. So I like that tactile feeling of the story, but I wanted to delve more into that. So in the spiritual warfare aspect, you have these beings. They are gleeful in the fact that people do not believe they exist. Why was this something that you felt had to be explored in this book?
So I've always been interested since I gave my life to the Lord. You know, I told you it was a powerful encounter in that, in the spirit, in because God's spirit, he resides in the spirit realm. And reading the Bible, you hear read about like archangels and the cherubim and the seraphim. And there's also in the demonic, there's the principalities and powers. And I was always intrigued by that. And so just, you know, heaven and all things like that. So when I was writing this book, you know, what was your question again? I'm sorry. It was, why did I?
No, I was saying, why was that important to have that hierarchy, to show that hierarchy and to show that they are glad that we think they don't exist?
Yes, I'm sorry. So I wanted to, so number one, for the reason why I wanted to show that people think that, it's, I remember I heard this quote when I was a kid. Somebody said, I think it was on an old, somebody gave me like a Christian album. They said one of the greatest deceptions Satan's ever given was convincing the world he didn't exist. And so, because you look around, I've looked around and I've watched people, I'm like, do they not, you know, when I was lost too, and I look back at my own life thinking, you know, oh my God, thank God I didn't die back then because I would have went straight to hell. You know, what was I thinking? And, you know, I looked around at other people and other in this world, and you see different things going on. And, you know, sometimes I wonder, I'm like, does people just, they just don't believe he exists. And, you know, one thing I do at my church is I'll preach every once in a while, and I love ministering and sharing the Lord everywhere I go, you know, like at the grocery store, at the gym. And I've talked to many people, and they're like, I don't believe in any of that. You know, I don't believe in that. I think when you die, you just die. And I'm like, it's been a great check for me in my heart. I'm like, how, because I was there once. You know, I didn't think there was anything to the Bible, church, heaven, hell, Jesus dying for my sins. I didn't think there's anything to it. And I just did whatever I wanted to do. And then God got my heart, interrupted my life. And I realized to the extent I was deceived. And so I wanted to show that, like the demons, when, if you don't believe something exists, if you don't believe there's danger out there, you're going to go and just do whatever. You know, if I tell you, hey, don't go swimming in this water over here, it's infested with sharks, and you don't believe me, you think I'm playing around, you're like, ah, whatever, and you go and swim, you know, uninhibited, and you're like, oh, whatever, I'm just going to go swim and play in the
chomp,
water.
Chomp,
nothing,
you know.
Going to happen. But then boom, chomp, and get them. And so
yeah.
I wanted to show that, that there is a heaven, there is a hell, and it's real, you know. Jesus is real. Satan is real. He wants to steal, kill, and destroy you. And so.
Oh, yeah. You did an excellent job with that. You did an excellent job. One of the things that I thought was actually profound is that you started off with the darkness. Because if the darkness exists, like hell, demonic forces, then heavenly forces have to exist. And I like the way that you actually portray that in the story. Another element you portrayed was this sense that Satan does not play fair, however people think that he does. And within the beginning of the story, you find out that Alex's family over time has sold their souls to Satan's service. And this conglomerate was a faction of his, of funding his kingdom on earth. And one of the things that wanted you to expand on was how Satan uses good intentions to destroy people, because that's something that happens in the book as well. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I got that from when Satan went and tempted Jesus in the wilderness. When, you know, after Jesus fasted for 40 days and became hungry, you know, Satan came to him. And Satan, when he came to him, he presented the word, you know, he presented the word of God, but he twisted it, right? He twisted it hoping that Jesus would sin. And when you read it, I remember when I first read that, I was amazed. You know, Jesus resisted every time, and he resisted by quoting the word correctly. And I thought, man, like, Satan is cunning. He's sly. He took the word of God, and he twisted it ever so slightly to try to present to Jesus when he was tired, when he was hungry, when he was thirsty, to try to get him to sin, to try to get Jesus to fall. And, you know, if he's going to do that to – if Satan's going to do that to Jesus – what's going to stop him from doing that to me? I'm nothing like Jesus. You know, I strive to be, we all do, right? We all want to be like the Lord and like the word says, do what he did and all those great things. But if Satan's that bold and cunning, you know, to do that, to try to trip Jesus up like that, he's going to come at me like that. He doesn't play fair. He will use everything against you in order to get you to compromise, to get you to sin, to wear you down, to break you down. And I wanted to show that in this book. Like, it is, you know, we're dealing with a very cunning foe. You know, I mean, yes, he's defeated. Jesus defeated him on the cross, but he's still very cunning. We have to be careful because it says he stalks around like a roaring lion, seeking who he can devour.
Yeah. He's very intentional in his hunt. And I think that should give you pause, that he is very intentional. And when Christ describes him as a hungry lion, it lets you know that he is starving, if you will. If I can move forward with the analogy, he's starving. He's ravenous to destroy you. And this is how the Lord described Satan. Now, I'm going to go ahead and mute myself, and I'm going to have you read an excerpt from The Man Wrapped in Darkness. So go ahead, set it up for us, and I'm going to go ahead and mute myself.
So the piece I'm going to read is actually The Man Wrapped in Darkness himself. And I pulled this. I think the readers will enjoy it, I hope. So here we go. I used to be human. I sat in my cocoon of darkness and watched as it slowly churned around me. My thoughts journeyed to how I came to be in that state. I once was a man made of flesh and bone. I had a wife and two young boys. They were my reason for living. I couldn't remember what I did before them. I enjoyed waking up early and making them breakfast each day, and I cherished all the time I got to spend with them. I loved each one of them so much, and I didn't mind going without so that they could have the things they wanted and needed. As I thought about them, my darkness formed the images of my sweet family in front of me, for it responded to my every thought. I reached out to touch their faces in a loving caress, but my hand passed through them and their images faded away. Tears filled my eyes and slowly cascaded down my face, which often happened when I would let my mind dwell upon them. They were everything to me. They were my purpose for existence, or so I thought. It wasn't until everything was taken away from me that I realized that my purpose was to become the man wrapped in darkness. I could have chosen any path while I was among the living, but all roads led to the day they were cruelly and unjustly ripped away from me. My fate had been a malice and unjust one, and I would never forget the name of the man who killed my family and me, Frederick Williams. I can still feel the pain from that, from the day I died, each punch and kick I was dealt at the hands of my attackers, but the most distinctive one was the gunshot wound to my head that ended my life on earth and thrust me into the spiritual one.
And that is an excerpt from The Man Wrapped in Darkness, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Once again, The Man Wrapped in Darkness is book one of the trilogy of the same name. All three books are out, so make sure you go ahead and get your copy today. I already bought The Man in White, and The Man in White sort of picks up, picks up right at the end of The Man Wrapped in Darkness. So you're definitely going to want to read these in order. They're not quite standalone. The events do interconnect, but what a series. I know you're going to enjoy it. So make sure you pick up your first copy of The Man Wrapped in Darkness. Now, one thing I know you may have gotten some critique is that it is a dark book, and maybe the whole darkness may have given someone the clue. So, but it may not have. I mean, sarcastic, but I like the fact that this is a dark thriller, but it does have that clean aspect to it. It's not ungritty. It's not like so clean that it's whitewashed. If anything, it just really shows you, without having to go into too much of graphic detail, that we are in a climate of spiritual warfare. And one of the amazing things that happens when you talk about spiritual warfare and when authors explore this element of our reality is that there are things going on right now as I speak, as you're sitting there drinking coffee, as Matt is sitting on the phone talking to me, there are spiritual forces at war over our souls. Why is the reality of that so important to note to our listeners, who are both believers and unbelievers, for that matter?
So the reason why it's so important is because it shows how much the Lord loves you, that he's fighting for you. His angels are fighting for you to stop the enemy, to stop Satan and his demons and the fallen angels from trying to steal, kill, and destroy you, because they will steal everything they can away from you. They will destroy you in a horrific way, and then they'll kill you in a horrific way and destroy you over and over and over again in the pit of hell. And it's so important for people to see that. So I wanted to show that so that people would take their walks with God serious. And a walk with God is amazing. It's not just serious at times. It's fun. It's great. In the second book, you talked about in the first book, it is a little darker because I take the reader into hell. And a lot of people told me, like, that scared them. They're like, I was terrified when I read that. And then in the second book, I take the reader into heaven, and they sit with Jesus in heaven in his personal rose garden. They sit under the tree of life, and they get to drink tea made from the fruit of the tree of life with Jesus. And I've had other people come to me with tears in their eyes and said, I wept when I read that part because I want that for myself so bad. So what I wanted to do through all of the warfare, through all of the battles, through all of that, was to show that every person is so important to the heart of the Father that he wars and battles for each person to reclaim them and to save them and to redeem them for him and his kingdom.
You know, I've enjoyed our time together. We are almost at the top of the hour. So in a few moments we have left, go ahead and tell us where we can find you online.
Yeah, so you can find me at, I have an author page, MatthewNewson.com. I also have an Amazon author page at amazon.com/Matthew Newson Books. I'm on Facebook. You can just search Matthew Newson Books. I have a goodreads.com, which is Matthew Newson Books, and then Instagram as well. So it's Instagram/Matthew Newson Books.
In the few moments we have left, I want you to use the time that we have to encouraging aspiring author out there to pick up the pen and write stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to just say, no matter what, just write. Yeah, just start writing. I know it can seem intimidating, but start writing. And don't, whatever you do, don't get discouraged. People are going to criticize you. There's going to be some people that are going to say just mean, nasty things about you. But I love if I could quote the movie Rocky, when he's talking to his son, he said, life is not how hard you can hit, but it's how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward, because that's how winning is done. And so that's what you have to do. Keep going. You got to be willing to take the hits, because some people aren't going to like it. Don't get angry about the editing process. That's only going to make it better. Don't get mad or discouraged how many rewrites you have to do. No matter what, just keep going, because it's an amazing thing you're doing. Writing is awesome, especially writing books for the Lord. And so encourage you, no matter what, don't give up, because you'll get there, and life will yield to you. So just encourage all the aspiring authors out there to, no matter what, just don't give up.
Matt, thank you so much for being with us on this edition of the show. Really enjoyed having you. I can't wait to have you back. Have you back soon.
Yeah, I'll have a new book coming out this fall. So it's called The Prophet's Anointing. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much. Had a great time.
And we were talking today to Matt Newson. He is the author of the book, The Man Wrapped in Darkness, book one of the Man Wrapped in Darkness series, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. This is his debut series, so I hope that encouraged you out there, that aspiring author listening to the sound of my voice. It doesn't matter where you are in life. He didn't even know how to write before. And then the Lord made things fall into place, gave him an editor, gave him friends, gave him encouragement, and now he has three books out. And guess what? He's going to keep writing. What about you? What are you going to do with the gift that God gave you? Are you going to let it sit there and atrophy, or are you going to pick up the pen and write stuff? Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen of Tuesday Nights, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.